Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Linda Moonrabbit Zlotnick, and we will be talking about her new book, Star Sisters, an astrologer's memoir of twin loss. Linda and her identical twin sister, Luann, shared everything growing up, a crib, their clothes, friends, and a special twin ESP. As young adults, they both came out as lesbians. They both were drawn to work in healing professions, Luann as a social worker and psychoanalyst, and Linda as a professional astrologer. When Luann dies of cancer at age 56, Linda experiences a soul-crushing loss. Through dreams, healers, the love of her family, and her study of something new, astrological death charts, Linda recovers and goes on to help others who suffer overwhelming grief. For more information, you can visit Linda's website, which is astrologybymoonrabbit.com. And I do have that listed in the show page description. Okay, with that, I'd like to welcome Linda to the show. Good day, Linda.
Hi there, Robert.
Well, I am happy to have you here. And this is, you know, your memoir is just a fascinating look. I mean, you know, between the intuitive and healing aspects and the identical twins and the gay aspect, you know, it's like, wow, we have a lot going on.
A lot going on is right.
Yeah, but a lot to help people. So that's the best part of it. So let's start with, I think we really should start with talking a little bit about Luann.
Yes.
Who was she? I mean, who was that essence?
Well, I think it's a little bit hard when you're a twin to have somebody in your life who physically resembles you, who thinks the way that you do. It's kind of like living with a mirror, you know. So we were different than each other, and she was born first, and she really took on the role of the older sister. And so the way she took on the role of the older sister was that, she just was a very responsible person and very kind of always trying to figure out the right thing and do the right thing. But both of us kind of were adventurous, but I would say she had more of an adventuring spirit than I did. She loved to whitewater canoe, and she loved to backpack, which I did too. She liked cycling and, doing cycling trips and boundary waters canoe trips, which I also did. So she was a very serious, kind of cerebral person who was made beautiful pottery and had this very outdoorsy, adventuring side to her. I suppose that describes a small part of who she was.
Yeah. So just curious, what was the time difference between your two births?
So it was long for twins.
Oh,
it was 24
okay.
minutes.
Oh, my gosh. That is. Okay. Because, you know, in all of the people who I've talked to who are twins and things you read about, a lot of times the one that, you know, pops out first, you know, does seem to take on that older sibling persona, you know, even if it's just minutes, before birth. But so now, this is obviously, you know, what's there, but did you do your natal charts for both of you? I mean, was there significant differences at all in that 24-minute period?
So, of course, I did our natal charts as soon as I could do it, as soon as I could do astrology. And I will say it was so long ago that there were no computers and there were no apps, and it involved logarithms and a lot of mathematics, and it was an involved process to do a horoscope. And it was very easy to make mistakes back then. But anyway, yes, of course, I did our two charts, and the main difference was the degree that we had on the ascendant. So that's the point on the chart that's tied to the time of birth. But in the book, I have a picture of both of our charts, you know, so for people who like astrology or study it, you know, the kind of placement of the planets in the houses was affected by that time change. But otherwise, no, there weren't any really super huge changes.
Oh. Okay. Well, that, you know, I always just find that curious, you know, and I figured that, you know, with identical twins, you know, it usually doesn't have, you know, much of a difference. But sometimes, and again, 24 minutes is quite a bit of time in between.
Yes, it is.
I guess you're kind of just waiting a little bit, making sure Luann said everything was clear to go. So.
Well, my mother was terribly surprised. She didn't find out until her 8-month checkup that she was having twins, and so it was a bit of a surprise all around.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
And
well,
part of
so
it
now,
was just that it was the late 40s, and they didn't have, you know, they had the stethoscope. They didn't have any imaging equipment or anything like that.
Yeah. So yeah, it was much easier to surprise back then. Well, now, what was your relationship with Luann growing up? What was that like?
Well, we were like everything to each other. You know, we were a little closed unit. We really understood each other, and we always played together. And, you know, we had our own little world, and we had a lot of shorthand for things. And it just... it's hard for non-twins, or not all twins have this, but there was this kind of easiness, this kind of, you know, we were just so much alike that it was so, it was like being with an extension of yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see where that would be the case, and then when if you have your twins that have that particular closeness, then when there's a loss of one, that becomes even that more significant. Because I mean, if you've lived with ease, you know, with someone for so long, then not having them there has to be completely foreign, you know, as far as an experience.
Exactly. Exactly, and I think not just from my experience, but I'm part of a group, Twinless Twins International, so now it's a very, very large group where people get together periodically to share and connect through Facebook pretty much every day. Twins never really anticipate that their twin will die before them. Everybody kind of comes into the game thinking, well, we were born on the same day, so, you know, we're just going to go out on the same day, too.
Oh, wow.
So there's this whole kind of real disbelief. I think in most families, you know, if somebody dies, you know, of course there's a certain amount of disbelief and shock and all that kind of emotion, but I think for twins, especially if you tend to have not just your looks or personality mirror each other, but your life events mirror each other, then it's very, very strange, you know, when one of you gets this really deadly illness and then, you know, doesn't have that long to live, or, you know, whatever the particular twin's story might be.
Yeah, you know, I would think, you know, that now when Luann was diagnosed with cancer, ovarian cancer at 56. That time that that diagnosis was delivered, I would think that if you, as a twin, have that idea of maybe, you know, we come in together, we're going out together, thought, even if it's subliminal or, you know, kind of just in the back of the mind, I would think that being confronted with that kind of diagnosis to one of the twins would shatter that idea, you know. So when Luann got, you know, the diagnosis, kind of how did that, I would think that it rocked your world of both of you.
Well, I had been very aware of an upcoming astrological transit in my chart that was an indication of a separation in a major relationship. And I thought that it meant that my primary person, who was Mindy, and I would be going through some really, really rough times. So as soon as I got the phone call from Luann at the hospital and she said she had cancer, I realized, oh, this is who's going to be separated. And, it, you know, if it was in my chart, it was in her chart, too, that she was in this big period of unexpected change and separation. So there was a way where, I mean, I wasn't prepared for the fact that it was her, but I was kind of walking around knowing that I was heading into a period of great upsetting change in my life. So I don't know if that quite answered your question.
Yeah, well, it does. It does, you know, because, you know, again, it's one of those things, you know, obviously as an astrologer and being able to see, you know, something up and coming, you know, that can kind of put you on the alert, you know. But again, like you say, you don't necessarily know the details of who and what it is. But I could see where getting that, being prepared for something like that, and then also, you know, the idea of, you know, soul lives on. I would think that you both had, you know, that it, I would think that it would be kind of, I don't want to say easier, but I mean, at least informed that it's, the surprise was softened a bit.
Except that, you know, you still really want the person in your life.
No.
You still really want them to talk to. And do you know what I mean? So, yes, it's lovely.
Right.
And I very much went into it believing in an afterlife. And I, by the end of her illness, which was a very kind of conscious, spiritual progression, I was very sure that we would be together again, you know. But there's still this huge gaping hole in your life. I think, you know, when anyone in your family or anyone that you really love a lot, you know, that just really leaves a big empty space in people's lives when they die.
Yeah, it does. And and actually, there was one quote in your book that I wanted to refer to at the end of the show, but I want to do it now because I think that it's kind of fitting. And that is actually toward the end of your book when you refer to the deaths of your mom and Luann. You indicate, although that you miss them greatly, like you just, you know, indicated that we would. But, quote, letting them go also meant I could let myself grow into who I really was. So can you just talk a little bit about that, you know, for the people out there who have maybe recently lost some, or who someone has passed on? I won't say lost. I was really lost.
Okay, well, I think, you know, when you lose a parent, parents always have expectations for us and of us. And I think that even in maybe, you know, not in wonderful family relationships, you love your parents and you want to make them happy, and so you kind of try and fulfill some of their hopes and dreams for you. So there's always, in unhealthy relationships, you know, you still want your parents' love and approval, so you try and fulfill some of their hopes and dreams for you, you know. So when parents live a natural lifespan, you know, there's a certain amount of becoming yourself in spite of what they hope or dream for you, just because you can't mold yourself to be somebody that you're not. With twins, I think it's really complicated because, so I'll speak for myself, okay? I never really had the luxury of being an individual, and because my sister and I lived in the same town our whole lives, I was constantly being mistaken for her. You know, and unfortunately, even after she was dead, people would come up to me and they would say, "Oh, Luann, I haven't seen you in so long." You know, and I don't think you can really understand what it feels like to not have to be this totally, you know, unique human being. We all want to be totally unique, but you don't have that when you're a twin, especially if you have a great physical resemblance. In fact, when I first started writing the book, I went on a writing retreat, and the teacher had asked us to bring something that would inspire us. So I brought a picture of my twin. And somebody walked over to me in the writing class and said, "Why do you have a picture of yourself on your desk?" They didn't know my story yet, you know, and it just seemed weird to them that I would bring this picture of myself for inspiration. No, it was a picture of my twin. So does that answer your question?
It does. Yes, it does. And, you know, it's, you know, to me, it's, I just find it, I mean, because in a way, also the twin experience, there's also the idea of unconditional love. I mean, that there's, you know, it's a given when it comes to twin, I would think, you know, that there is a great chance for that unconditional love to be represented.
May I speak to that?
Sure.
Because there are very troubled twinships, you know.
Okay.
So Luann and I were really lucky, and we were each other's primary support. But a lot of twins really, you know, they struggle. They one twin is mentally ill and the other twin isn't. One twin is highly favored for some reason by the family and the other twin isn't. Sometimes fraternal twins, which are actually just like any two siblings, you know, so they even have the same birth chart, which is really interesting to me, but they have a different genetic makeup, and they can just not, just like any siblings, not really like each other. And so, do most identical twins love each other? I would say absolutely. And do most identical twins share this kind of bond that in some ways it's actually beyond being in a marriage with someone? Because when you're a twin, you have the same genetic makeup as someone, and then you have this 9 months being together in this very confined place,
right,
where you're growing and maturing together. And then, you know, children go through all these different developmental phases. And when you're siblings, you know, yeah, you have somebody older or younger, but the twins are developing and going through their developmental phases at the same time. And their experience of their parents is very similar, because you know how in a family you can have like an older brother, and maybe the family was kind of poor and struggling financially, and then by the time the younger sibling comes along, then they're doing better and they have a little more money and the family has a little more luxury and the parents are less stressed. And if you talk to those two siblings, their feeling about, you know, what their parents were like is very different than each other.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
even though Luann and I had the same family, there were some differences, because I was left at the hospital because I had to be in an incubator, and she went home first and had some kind of, you know, one-on-one time without me there with the family, with the parents.
Oh. Yeah, Interesting. Very, very interesting. So what inspired you to write Star Sisters, you know, the fact that it's a memoir?
Well, after my twin died, it took a couple, maybe it was 2.5 or 3 years or so. Very, very shortly after she died, I wrote a tiny little book. I had been working with a painting teacher, and it was kind of a book using my art to describe the experience of losing a twin. But a couple years after that, I just felt like taking writing classes. I just wanted to explore that. And, you know, they always say write what you know. And so I started just writing about the story of, you know, getting the diagnosis and what that initial experience was of, you know, visiting my twin in the hospital and then going to all of her doctor's appointments with her. And it was very, very therapeutic. So I kept doing it because it got it out. It got it out of me. Writing it down was just like, oh, okay, now it's on a page. I don't have to, like, think about it in the same way. So I didn't know when I started that I would actually write a book. You know, I just kind of did it because it was therapeutic.
Right.
And
right.
Anything that helped.
Yeah. And then, lo and behold, it becomes a book that helps others. So, but, you know, that's the beauty of being, of writing or journaling is the fact that you know, can express all of those emotions and gain perspective, you know, on things that are going on in your life. And then, I know, also be able to refer back to it, you know, and see, you know, successes or changes and all that kind of thing. So, I mean, it becomes a way not only to help you, but then again, if you choose to go on and share it, as you did, then it can help others. So did you have any hesitancy in putting that information out there, doing, you know, the personal inside look?
Yes, I think probably every memoirist has some degree of, you know, am I revealing too much? Will people see me the same and all of that kind of thing? But I'm of a certain age now where I really don't care very much. You know, I mean, that's one of, I think, the best things about aging is I really understand that people's reaction is about them. And there will be people who will love this book and will benefit greatly, and there will be people who hate it and people who think it's stupid. And, you know, because everybody's different. And so if everybody loved it, I would really be shocked.
Well, you know, and the reason that I ask that, too, is because, like you said, that every person who writes a memoir type of book would have some hesitation. But, you know, virtually everyone I have spoken with, you know, doesn't regret the idea, you know, that when they finally got down to doing it, maybe overcoming some fear or confronting some fear, that, that, you know, they've felt that they've helped more than, you know, anything that may have, you know, been uncomfortable for them, that they got through it.
Well, I've taken lots of memoir classes, and this is a thing that comes up regularly for discussion. You know, students will talk about, I don't really know if I can tell the truth in my memoir because, you know, these people are still around and I don't want to hurt the relationship, or, you know, I don't want to embarrass the family, or, you know, I mean, that's all very, very real.
Yeah.
So.
Yep, I'm sure. Well, we're about halfway through the show, Linda, so I want to take a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Linda any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in. And then when we come back from the break, Linda, I understand that at the time of Luann's passing, you had your hand on her heart. I want to talk about that because
for sure.
Yeah, okay. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide, books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my special guest is Linda Moon Rabbit Zlotnick, and we're talking about her new book, Star Sisters, an Astrologer's Memoir of Twin Loss. And again, you can find out more about Linda and all that she has to offer by visiting her website, which is astrologybymoonrabbit.com. So with that, we're back, Linda?
Yes.
Okay, so when I read about that, your hand on her heart at that point, it just, for me, the closest I ever came to that was when my father passed, but I was not there at that moment. He did. I mean, it was like maybe the last time I saw him was maybe an hour before I went to dinner. But, and I think that he knew that I didn't want to be there right at that minute, you know. So, and it's interesting because there were many ways I did not want to be there at that moment, you know. I mean, the moment of passing, but I did want to be there, you know, during the waning, you know, hours. So, tell us about, you know, what you did, why you did that, and, you know, because I think, you know, that when it comes to that moment of death, that it's such a intensely personal kind of moment.
Well, Luann had a very kind of conscious death, and she decided to go on hospice, even though, you know, the medical people were suggesting various options, you know, and I think she just got to a point where, you know, she knew that nothing was going to make any difference. And kind of through the, so she, from the diagnosis to the death was just maybe a tad over 5 months. So it was a very, very quick decline. And it kind of happened that this care team evolved around her, people from various parts of her life, not all of them people even she would have expected, just became part of who was there, especially during that last 5 days when she was in hospice. And so, you know, she was saying her goodbyes, and she had put her affairs in order, and she was declining because she wasn't eating or drinking anything. And so a few people were staying at the house, and I lived really close, and so I didn't stay at her house every night. But, you know, as it became clear that she was really withdrawing more and more, you know, everybody just who was on that care team just spent the night at the house, and we had somebody kind of sit with her in shifts overnight, and then the next morning my folks came, and Mindy came to support me and a few other people, and but just basically the people that she wanted around were around her bedside as, you know, she was taking her last breath. So so she was in a coma, which is very common. And the reason that I put my hand on her heart was her breathing was so erratic. And, you know, as people die, sometimes they can stop breathing for a minute and then start breathing again. And so you can tell more about kind of what's happening. And she had lost, it's very, very common with ovarian cancer. She had lost so much weight. And so really she was very literally skin and bones. And so I could feel her heart really very, very distinctly. You know, it was almost like I was holding it in my hand. And I was so, I don't know how to explain it because, I mean, of course I knew she was dying. But when her heart stopped beating, it was almost as if some part of me, some connection I had that was bigger than me, and some part of me, I felt dead. I don't know how to explain it other than that. It was like a switch flipped off that I was used to having on, and I called it a connection. You know, I called it a connection that was always there that I knew from conception, and it was like flick, now it's gone. And it was the strangest, most kind of horribly lonely feeling I've ever had in my life.
Wow, that has to, I mean, that has to have been, I can't imagine it. I mean, I can't imagine, because, you know, most of us don't have that innate connection, you know, with, there are varying degrees, but I mean, that's an intensity when you have shared so much of your life, you know. Now, with that connection, when that kind of light went out, that light turned out, has it turned on?
How does that
happen?
Yes. Well, in part through writing the book, you know, I felt like it, well, so through writing the book, through a series of amazing dreams, I got a wonderful grief counselor that was of enormous help. I got help from a homeopath. There were a lot of different resources that I found, the Twinless Twins group. So it just so many things, but I would say in a very big way that the writing the book and making the book public and bringing it out into the world, as I've gotten closer and closer to, you know, kind of the completion of one part of the project, which is the actual writing, and then the beginning of the other part of the project, which is kind of making the book more public, I dreamt about Luann last night, you know, and we were just doing something really, really ordinary. Gardening, or I don't remember what it was. I know it was outside, and, you know, it was just like the old days. Like, you know, we just hang out and do regular stuff together. And so, yeah, I just feel her close now a lot.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, that was really kind of the worst thing, was to have that emptiness.
I would think, you know, now the light is a different, you know, kind of, I'm sure, a different type of light that is switched on. And you know, now with the book out there, I mean, you have a lot more people thinking about, you know, Luann and about twins and about connection. I mean, so it's really stimulating a lot of thought and discussion, which I would think that Luann
yes.
would be very happy with.
Yes. I agree with all of those things.
Yeah. So now, as an astrologer, of course, you were going to, you know, you said you had that that indication that something was going to be up and coming. After her death, you studied her death chart. So I had never heard of the idea of a death chart. So can you talk to us a little bit about that? And I mean, is this something that's a common tool for astrologers?
I had never heard of the idea of a death chart either.
Okay. So, I just thought I was just too out of it there.
No. But something a lot of people don't know is that astrologers do charts for everything. You know, so if you're thinking about buying a new house and you're going to an open house, you might look at the time where you first meet the house and you can do a birth chart for the house. Or, you know, if you're thinking of moving to a different city, all cities have birth charts. So you might look at the birth chart of that city and look at your chart. Is that going to be a good place for you to live? And, you know, so I know people, financial astrologers, who make investments using different cycles. And so when you're a professional astrologer, you're just hyper, hyper conscious of, you know, every hour of the day or every minute of the day. You know, there's all these various positionings going on in the heavens, and they all have different meanings. And so after Luann's heart stopped beating, the first thing I did was look at my watch, because that's just what I do. And so I thought, well, maybe there will be something that I can learn if I create just this chart for the moment that she died. And it's not a birth chart, it's a death chart. So I decided to call it that. And I took it and I compared it to, my whole life's path, my birth chart. And so when she was sick, I have to admit that I looked at the stars, because I thought, gee, will I be able to actually foretell any kind of, you know, end point to this? And I really, of course, was way, way, way too close and invested to be able to do anything like
yeah.
that. But
yeah.
But I couldn't. But I thought it was worth a try. as it worked out, the very moment that there were two really profound things, probably multiple profound things, but two that really come to me right now. And one has to do with the beginning of our second Saturn return. So for people who know astrology, Saturn returns every 28 and a half years to the exact position that it was when you were born. And Saturn returns are associated with learning some of life's hardest lessons. And they're associated with finishing unfinished business from past lives, if you believe in that. And they're very much associated with a kind of maturation process that everybody goes through in life in terms of having to be responsible for yourself. So all of those themes were very, very relevant for me.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that death chart, have you gone on to study others? I mean, I would think that since you did that, that other people, surviving folks, would want maybe to have that done. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, any experiences with other people coming to you?
Yes.
And things that maybe you have found out from doing that?
Yes. So it took me quite a while before I felt like I was ready to do that kind of a consultation for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Before I kind of made it a public thing that I offered on my website, I invited a number of clients that I'd been working with for many years to come see me. And I practiced on them, which was very, very useful. But then I made it a kind of public offering. And one of the readings that really I remember so distinctly was a mother, a kind of middle-aged mother whose teenage daughter had been killed in a freak car accident. And I was really, really enormously concerned. I have two children, and one of them was about the same age as her daughter, and I just thought, wow, you know, the loss of a child, I think, is so unbearable. It just goes against the natural order of life in such a terrible way, you know. So I just thought, well, what will I have to offer, you know, for this grieving mother? So I put the chart through the computer, which is a wonderful thing that we have now, and it was so clear to me that the daughter wanted to, like, send her mom a psychic message that she was actually thinking about how terrible this would be for her family, that she was conscious long enough to kind of try and send her mom this message, you know? So the mom came in, and we talked a bit, and then I said to her, the young woman was on a high school trip in Spain, so they were in a very, very small town, and the mom told me that it took them 24 hours to track down her phone number so that she got a phone call 24 hours after the car accident in Spain. And I said to her, did you feel anything before you got the phone call? And she said to me, the whole day, from the moment she woke up, her body, she said it was like being underwater. You know, like, you know, it was hard to breathe, and she couldn't really, like, do her, everything took forever, and her mind was so muddled. And I said to her, so your body knew before you got the news? And she said, oh, my God, yes, it did. And then I told her, you know, the last thing your daughter wanted to do was to send you this message. And that was like a great relief for her.
Yeah.
You know, it was like she just had this very, very big emotional release. And then she came and saw me a year later, which, you know, I was really surprised about. And she said the most stunning thing about the time that we spent together is that I talked to her a little bit about the coming months, and she was so devastated she couldn't even imagine that she had a future.
Right.
And just to have somebody
right.
talk in a matter-of-fact way about what to expect over the coming months was so reassuring to her that was as meaningful as that awareness that she got about how her body knew that not exactly that her daughter was in jeopardy, but that something was very, very different out there in the universe.
Yeah. Wow. You know, when you just think about, I would never have thought that, you know, that the surety of conveying, you know, life after, you know, that it would, I can see where that would be very just, reassuring and stunning and probably contrary to what people believe and are being told by other people around them, you know. I mean, that, you know, that you're going to get through this and, you know, these are the things that are going to be up and coming when you do.
I just, you know, a lot of people feel guilty. You know, like if they didn't make it to like their parents' bedside, there's a lot of different, fairly, I would say, common feelings that people go through with death and loss. And, you know, I mean, besides the grief part, you know, sometimes there's guilt in. So I had another person who wasn't really able, you know, she was en route to say goodbye to her dad and he died. And his death chart was so peaceful. It was just, you know, it was like he just went away. And I said to her, he just had such an easy, easy time, like, you know, letting go and moving on to what was next. And that really put her heart at rest. You know, that
yeah.
even though she couldn't be there, that his transition was so smooth and painless. So there are these different, it's very interesting to me, you know, these, I call them signatures that show up in death charts that, you know, can, it can shed some light on what was going on right at that moment. And then it certainly can be a vehicle for the person who's going through the grief to understand what on their life journey they are supposed to be understanding or gaining from this kind of horrible event.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it would be. So would you say that the death chart perspective that you're doing now, that was maybe one of the valuable insight kind of that followed Luann's passing?
Yes. So, you know, as an outcome of losing a twin, to have this new field of interest, I feel a real calling for it, to be working with bereaved people, to help them not necessarily do the grieving part, but do the finding meaning in the loss part of life. And so this is completely unexpected to me that it'll be 14 years next month that that was one of the outcomes of losing my twin.
Wow, that's my goodness. So now I have to ask this. During the introduction, I introduced you as Linda Moon Rabbit Zlotnick, and your website is Astrology by Moon Rabbit. So what's the story behind Moon Rabbit?
Well, yes, of course there's a story, because I was in college and I got a reading from another astrologer, another college student who was studying astrology. And when I started studying astrology, I felt like I'd finally found something that helped me make sense of everything, because it helps you understand people, it helps you understand yourself, it helps you understand what's going on in your life. And I studied it for a few years, and I thought, you know, I don't even feel like the same person that I was before I found astrology. So I was with some friends, and we were all kind of just feeling like we'd outgrown some aspect of ourselves, and we wanted to do a naming ceremony, you know. So everybody was just tossing out names, and somebody tossed out Moon, and I really liked that, and the Moon is prominent in my chart, so that was like a good fit. And then somebody said Moon Rabbit, and I, for some reason, just loved it. And so I just said, okay, I'm going to do astrology using this name, Moon Rabbit. And a lot of people love it, and I also have learned that a lot of people don't. But it did distinguish me, and it made me easier to remember in some ways. So
It does, yes. I, you know, and I can understand I can't understand anybody not liking it, but I can understand, you know, I mean, it is unique, and it's wonderful to have, you know, that story behind it. And you know, with hundreds and thousands of astrologers out there, you know, you want to make sure that people know who you are and are be able to, I mean, when someone says Moon Rabbit, they're going to think of Linda Zlotnick. I mean, that's just it. You know, there's no other comparison. So, okay, so now I guess my final question is this. What do you hope the readers of Soul Sisters will take away from the book?
Well, that's a really wonderful question. So I'm hoping that for anybody who has suffered a really, like, heartbreaking, soul-shattering loss, that they will see that there is hope, that, you know, recovery is possible, that sometimes unexpected outcomes result from something that seems at the moment the most tragic thing that could ever happen. So that's one hope that I have. Another hope that I have is something we haven't talked about, but a lot of the book is about that there are all these different ways open to us of knowing things, and astrology is a wonderful avenue for tapping into what usually remains unknown, and dreams are another way to do that, and psychics are another way to do that. And I had somebody write to me who finished the book about having to pay more attention to when she knows things and having to trust that more because she absolutely is really intuitive. Like, she foresaw this car accident that she got into, and if she wouldn't have gotten into the car, she wouldn't have gotten into the accident. So I think we all know more than we think we know, and I would like people also to come away from the book feeling like, oh, yeah, I'm going to listen to those voices that I have, you know, which I think most of us have to some degree, but we've trained ourselves to not pay attention to them.
Yeah, that's very true. And life really flows so much smoother when you kind of listen to, you know, and follow, you know, those little bits of the insights that you get.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. Well, I know you're on Facebook because we're connected as friends. So, you know, for listeners out there who use Facebook, do connect to Linda and me there. And also now, Linda, on your website, you have a place where people can explore your services. So what would those services be?
Well, so like most astrologers, I do birth charts, I do compatibility charts, and I do forecast charts. And so each one of those serves a very unique purpose. The birth chart helps you understand who you are and why you're here. Compatibility charts obviously help people understand whether it's a business relationship or whether it's a troubled friendship or sibling relationship or whether it's a primary romantic relationship. It helps people understand each other and the relationship. And then the forecast, which is what commonly most people come to astrologers for, it gives you a perspective on cycles that you're in, and I relate them back to other cycles that you've experienced, so we can kind of go data mining. What was this time like for you then, and what might you expect in terms of what's coming now?
Yeah. Great.
And then, of course, the death charts.
Oh, then, yes, absolutely. So so for listeners out there, those are the services. You can also find on her website a link to Healing from Loss and also links to her schedule and blog. So, Linda, I want to thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed speaking with you and look forward to our connection on Facebook.
Thank you very much, Robert. I enjoyed our time together as well.
Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Linda Moon Rabbit Zlotnick, and you now know how Moon Rabbit came about. She is author of Star Sisters, an Astrologer's Memoir of Twin Loss. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is astrologybymoonrabbit.com. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again...
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at byteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.